Thank you, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, July 18th, 2016. I beg your pardon. Today is Tuesday, July 18th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Mugabe takes a swipe at Pastor Ivan Mawarire, saying he is being sponsored by the West to cause problems in Zimbabwe.
You can't urge people to adopt violence. Violent demonstrations as the way of life or the way of solving grievances. No.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission implements sweeping electoral reforms in the country.
We've got to reform our way of doing things. We've got to reform how you access the voter's roll in our custody. Searchability of the voter's roll, that is a requirement of the law. So whatever role we've got to the voter's roll that we are going to come up with, it must be searchable.
Some churches say they have lost confidence in President Robert Mugabe's government.
If there's any time where we need a clear leadership and we need direction and the church coming together and speaking from one voice, it is this time.
And U.S. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump's wife, Melania, is accused of allegedly plagiarizing United States First Lady Michelle Obama's 2008 speech.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
President Robert Mugabe today launched a scathing attack on Pastor Ivan Mawarire of this flag movement, who rose to prominence for criticizing his government and organizing crippling protests in Zimbabwe. President Mugabe even doubted that Pastor Mawarire was a minister of religion, despite the fact that he was once a child president. Reporter Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Officiating at the burial of the former chief secretary to the president and cabinet, President Mugabe accused Pastor Ivan Mawarire of being foreign sponsored.
The Mawarires, I don't even know him. Those who believe in that way of living in our country, well, are not part of us. If they don't like to live with us, let them go to those who are sponsoring them. To the countries of those who are sponsoring them, fine. You can't urge people to adopt violence, violent demonstrations as the way of life or the way of solving grievances. No. We will say no. Forever no. Find another environment. If you are a pastor, I don't know if he's a man of religion. A man of religion, we would hope, would preach biblical peace.
Mawarire was arraigned before a Harare magistrate last week on charges of subverting a constitutionally elected government, but was set free after his lawyers convinced the court that the man of cloth was illegally brought before a Harare magistrate, as he was not warned and cautioned on the charges that he was facing. Mr. Mugabe's scathing attack on Pastor Mawarire was criticized by some Harare residents like Worship Dumba, who said the president is running away from addressing issues affecting Zimbabweans. Dumba said the president was no longer fit to rule.
One thing about President Mugabe is that he takes all Zimbabweans for fools who don't even know that they are hungry and they should say they are hungry. Because once they say they are hungry, according to President Mugabe, there will be a foreign hand behind it. So what I actually suggest to the president is that you must sit down with all those people demonstrating, ask them what their real issues are, and they should actually solve them, solve those issues, pay civil servants on time, deal with corrupt leaders, arrest corrupt people, whether they are ministers, they must actually go to jail.
Instead of attacking Pastor Mawarire and the church, some critics like Barnabas Tondlana, editor of the Observer newspaper, said Mr. Mugabe should listen to the concerns of the people who elected him instead of seeing them as enemies.
It's dangerous for government to be fixated upon arresting people than arresting problems. Those who point out problems can never be the problem. And what we are seeing with the president right now is he has lost touch with what is happening on the ground. Those who point out problems can never be the problem.
At the same time, Mr. Mugabe accused some new farmers of not utilizing the land that was parcelled out to them under the country's land reform program. President Mugabe said if land was used properly, Zimbabwe would regain its status as the jewel of Southern Africa. Turning to Utete, who joined government at independence in 1980, President Mugabe said the deceased was a loyal employee who transformed the civil service from what it was before independence and helped in crafting the land review policy. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Zimbabwe Electoral Commission Chairperson Justice Rita Makarau says the Election Management Body is implementing a raft of measures aimed at making the Zimbabwe's electoral system more transparent and credible. Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
Makarau told a stakeholders' conference organized by the Elections Resource Center that the reforms include a robust and efficient biometric voter registration exercise that would eliminate the dead and absent from the voter's roll. She said the polling station-based voter registration exercise would, among other issues, result in the reduction in the number of ballot papers per polling station and reduce chances of double voting.
Accessibility of the voter's roll, because it is now in our hands, we can't use the arguments that we previously used to use and say the voter's roll is with the RIG, we can't give it to you. It's going to be in our hands and we've got to make it accessible to you. We've got to reform our way of doing things. We've got to reform how you access the voter's roll in our custody. Searchability of the voter's roll, that is a requirement of the law. So whatever roll we've got to the voter's roll that we are going to come up with, it must be searchable in our hands.
She said the reforms, some of which are mandatory, were driven by the new constitution, recommendations from observer missions in previous elections, as well as constructive engagement with stakeholders. Makarau said ZEC was ready to engage stakeholders and political parties on a monthly basis with a view to build trust and confidence in the electoral process. People's Democratic Party Secretary for Elections, Settlement Chikwinya, said efforts by the Commission to consult stakeholders are commendable. Kuraone Chwai, spokesperson of the MDC formation led by Professor Walsh Mnguwe, said Makarau must be given a chance to implement the reforms.
We welcome the engagement of ZEC and civil society and political parties, in fact, with all stakeholders. And we look forward to good relations between stakeholders and Zimbabwe Electoral Commission.
Women's Coalition Coordinator Salidura said she hoped this time ZEC would implement reforms as recommended by stakeholders.
We are now expecting for ZEC to actually deliver on the commitments and the invitations that it extends. So the behavior change also of ZEC as an institution, Justice in particular with her team, in terms of how they access information and how they implement recommendations that we have shared, will be a testimony of whether they are taking us seriously or paying a lip service.
Opposition political parties and civil society mistrust the Electoral Commission, saying it's not been conducting its business in a transparent manner and that it is militarized and full of security agents. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chipera.
Some church and community leaders under various umbrella bodies say Zimbabweans have lost confidence in the government and say there is urgent need for a national dialogue between the government and different stakeholders in order to help alleviate the ongoing crisis. Taurai Shava reports.
Izwa, Baba, Leaders from different church groups, civic organization activists, as well as ordinary people gathered in Rulai on Sunday and prayed for God's intervention in the ongoing social, political and economic crisis in Zimbabwe. Chairperson Reverend Ray Motsi of the Christian Alliance of Zimbabwe, which convened the gathering, told Studio 7 that the initiative is as a result of the realization that the church has been silent amid all the hardships that ordinary Zimbabweans are facing. He said the situation in the country compels the church to give guidance to the people.
I think this is the most appropriate time for us to come together as a church and show clear leadership and also be able to speak with one voice, especially in a situation where there's been a dearth of leadership, a disappearance of a clear, conscious voice that can help our people in order to know what is going on and what to do.
At the gathering, some people, many of them women and children, who were reportedly brutalized by police in the aftermath of recent protests in Bulawayo, gave testimonies of their experiences. Reverend Motsi blasted the police, saying instead of harassing people, they should uphold their human rights and protect them in violent situations. He said the church should not be afraid to speak out against the country's political leadership where it has failed the people.
I can assure you that there are a lot of people, including pastors, that are cowards, that are afraid of saying the truth. Deep down within their hearts, they know the truth and they don't want to do it, or they're afraid of it. There's not been a clear voice from the church. The truth of the matter is, if we have to be prophetic, we need to declare this situation is a disaster. If there's any time where we need a clear leadership and we need direction and the church coming together and speaking from one voice, it is this time.
At the service, the church leaders and civic organizations, including the Zimbabwe Council of Churches, the Zimbabwe Catholic Bishops Conference, Evangelical Fellowship of Zimbabwe, Union for the Development of Apostolic Churches in Zimbabwe, the Ecumenical Church Leaders Forum, and Habakkuk Trust, issued a statement expressing their concern over the situation in the country. Part of their statement stressed that the people have lost confidence in the government and there is need for the government to get into dialogue with various national stakeholders so as to help stem the deepening crisis. Secretary General Gordon Moyo of the People's Democratic Party, who also attended the service, agreed with the view that the country's political leadership has failed the nation and said his party supports the church's call for national dialogue.
We support the idea of the national dialogue that is in the press statement by the church. Because the national dialogue is what is needed. The people must talk. The people must come up with a solution. We have had enough.
Some observers have often criticized the church in Zimbabwe for not speaking out against government excesses or for showing support for the government even where it has failed. On the other hand, government has often disapproved of the few churches that have spoken out against it, accusing them of interfering in politics. Reverend Motsi said following Sunday's gathering, he expects more church denominations to join the initiative so that the church can play its appropriate role of speaking truth to power. Reporting for Studio 7 from Lawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
The government, which is still to set pay dates for its workers, has moved in to quell dissent within civil servants following social media posts allegedly showing July pay dates having been moved to next month again like last month. This as fears grow that those who did not turn up for work during the recent stay away will be victimized. Labour Minister Prisca Mufumira today called a meeting with the workers' representatives to allay their fears, telling them that the dates will be made known this Friday, adding the delay would not be as much as last month. She said the delay was caused by the absence of Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa and Reserve Bank Governor John Mangudya, who had gone on a fundraising expedition to the West but returned with an empty begging bowl. We spoke to the spokesman of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, Enoch Paradzai, who attended today's meeting.
What came out was that the government was saying they don't have paid dates yet for this month. So all what is circulating on WhatsApp and on Facebook, those dates, they are not coming from government. They are saying they are waiting. They were waiting for the Minister of Finance, Chinamasa, and also the Reserve Governor, who were outside the country, so that they approach them to find out when resources can be available. Or they say they arrived yesterday in the country, so they are giving them up to Friday, and then by Friday they are going to give us the correct pay days. But they promise to say it is going to be better this month than what it was last month. But the dates, they don't have them. So we are waiting until Friday so that we get the dates from there, and then we make a decision from there.
We understand that some teachers were being threatened by their employer because of having participated in the stay away. Can you tell us more on that?
Yeah, the minister brought that issue in today's meeting to say there's information that there are some teachers who reported for duty and there are a few who did not report for duty. So they were saying they want to take action against those who did not report for duty because the others reported, why didn't these ones report? So our position to them was that that is not going to be possible because these teachers, they don't have the same obligations. There are some who have loans and some do not have. Some they have other sources of making money. So those who reported for duty, we don't know where they got the money from. But those who did not report, it's because they were incapacitated. So if we understood the government that they can push the pay dates up to the time that they gave us money, they must also understand us when we say these teachers who did not report for duty, they do not have the resources to report for duty.
That was Enoch Paradzai, the spokesman of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare. We also reached the economic commentator Eddie Cross, who's also the policy coordinator of the MDCT.
The situation is that right at this moment of time, the government has not been able to pay pensions for June. That's a cost of about $40 million, and it covers about 380,000 people. So for them, this is a priority. They have to do that. So their problem is that that's only going to be done by the end of the month. So at the end of the month, they'll literally have nothing in the treasury to pay anyone. And that is why they haven't been able to fix a pay date. The normal pay date for the army is the 14th of the month. They haven't even given a pay date for the army. So this is really a crisis.
But do you think that there is at least a bit of money? Because we see President Mugabe is able to fly in and fly out of the country.
When he flies out, he takes about $3 million. And that really is small beer. That's 1% of the salary bill. But all the same, they have enough money for that sort of thing, but they don't have any money for salaries. Employment costs you $280 million a month, so it's the biggest single item in the budget.
Now, when we look at the revenue for the country, for the government, do you think there's something getting in, like, for example, the customs, taxes and stuff like that?
That is the core problem. Since 2013, revenue to the state has declined by about 37%. And if you look at the first quarter of this year, revenue was down 11% again. And the second quarter, revenue is also down. So the situation is that salary costs are about $280 million, but revenue is less than that. That is their fundamental problem. And they've been borrowing money to try and cover the gap, but now that potential has been exhausted.
Now, looking at the future, what do you see? Do you think that there'll be a time when the government will not be able to pay civil servants at all?
Well, I think that's with us now. I think that's with us in August. And I see this as being a make-or-break period for the government. Frankly, I do not see Mr. Mugabe surviving August. I think that he will be forced to resign or retire, and I think that the international call for a national transitional authority to run the country until we get to an election is going to be the only solution.
And that was economic commentator Eddie Cross, who's also the policy coordinator of the MDCT. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C. Now we take a look at regional and international news.
The International Olympic Committee, or IOC, has delayed a decision on whether to ban all Russian teams from competing in next month's Rio Olympics over allegations of an elaborate doping scheme.
And the 27th African Union Summit has wrapped up in Kigali, Rwanda.
Political analysts and economists are warning that Zimbabwe risks becoming a failed state as the country faces multiple social and economic problems, spawned by endemic governance failures and compounded by a deliberating ruling party succession crisis. Harare has been lurching from one crisis to the next. The latest is the divisive debate on whether Harare must pay its arrears to the international community or its restive civil servants. Blessing Zulu has more.
Central Bank Chief John Mangujga says Harare has secured a loan from the Africa Export and Import Bank to repay arrears totaling $1.8 billion. This, Mangujga says, will help Harare to access fresh funding and revive the ailing economy.
We are on track on the program to repay our arrears to the ADB, World Bank and IMF, and that is scheduled during the board meetings of ADB and World Bank in September, and we look forward to clear our arrears by that time to help Zimbabwe to access new funding for the Zimbabwean programs that include Zimaset and the rest of the other programs.
But from remarks from the International Monetary Fund and the United States of America, which has veto power at the IMF board, it's not clear that Harare will automatically get fresh loans after settling its arrears. At a press briefing last week, IMF Communications Department Director Gary Rice said Zimbabwe was working on a plan to clear its arrears with the fund and other international institutions, adding there was no financing program under discussion. Rice said, irrespective of the calendar for arrears clearance, the Zimbabwean economy needed immediate reforms to address challenges that have come to the fore. In an exclusive interview with Studio 7, United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Harry Thomas Jr. said it is premature to talk about the U.S. response now, as Zimbabwe has to settle its debt first. This, according to former Finance Minister Tendai Biti, also leader of the opposition People's Democratic Party, points to demands by the IMF and the international community for Harare to reform.
It means that we are in serious debt. And when you are in serious debt, you can't continue to borrow. What the government is trying to do, debt is a disease. When you are in debt, you are a junkie. You are like a drug addict. So when someone is a drug addict, when someone is an alcoholic, you don't give him more alcohol. So what the Chinamasa is trying to do to Zimbabwe, that is a drug addict, that is an alcoholic. He's trying to cure that alcoholism, that hangover, by giving this country more beer, more whiskey, more bottles of whiskey. It doesn't work. That's why we can't borrow from Peter to pay Paul so that we can borrow more from Paul.
Economist Professor Tony Hawkins concurs with Biti, but adds that with an election looming, Harare will not institute reforms.
Quite honestly, if you think of a party, very unpopular government, with elections in 2 years' time, they're not going to want to introduce a whole lot of tough reforms like reducing the size of the civil service and so on.
But the question is whether Harare must prioritize clearing its arrears or pay its workers. Economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe says workers must come first.
Basically, my take is that I think Zimbabwe country should prioritize the payment of wages and salaries to its workers, because already government is in a contractual relationship with these workers. So I think they are bound to meet their side of the bargain. With respect to the payment of debt arrears, well, I think it's important. But I think that should not supersede the payment of salary.
But Hawking says it's comparing apples and oranges.
Well, I don't think it's a choice in the sense that, to pay the arrears, they have to borrow the money. I mean, they don't have the money themselves. They're going to borrow it from all over the place. So, if they had a choice, then you could say, yeah, we would perhaps better pay the workers than the arrears. But in fact, you can hardly borrow money to pay workers, and that wouldn't be very successful.
What then is the way forward? Biti says Harare must look inwards and also admit that it has failed. President Robert Mugabe, though, has blamed sanctions imposed by Western countries for the government's failure to pay its workers on time. According to the latest statistics from the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority, collections in the second quarter of the year were $861 million against a target of $892 million. But what is the end game? The International Crisis Group, or ICG, has warned that mounting tensions in ZANU-PF over President Robert Mugabe's succession, the dire economic crisis and related issues could see Zimbabwe sliding into a failed state. The think tank also noted that neither the government nor the opposition has a plan the country is willing to rally behind. Former U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe, James McGee, also warned at one time that Zimbabwe was rapidly deteriorating into failed state status. The ICG says for Harare to avoid the prolonged uncertainty, it must address Mr. Mugabe's succession, seek to rebuild trust and collaboration with domestic and international constituencies by holding an inclusive dialogue with the opposition and civil society on political and economic reforms. But what happens if reforms fail? Author Robert I. Rodbeck, in a book titled Failed States, Collapsed States, Weak States, Causes and Indicators, says Harare becomes a failed state. Rothbeck adds that, driven by ethnic or other intercommunal hostility or by the governing elite's insecurities, they victimize their own citizens or some subset of the whole that is regarded as hostile. As in Mobutu Sese Seko Zaire or the Taliban's Afghanistan, ruling cadres increasingly express, extort and harass the majority of their own compatriots while privileging a more narrow-based party, clan or sect. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.
The Republican National Convention today moves to the nomination of real estate mogul Donald Trump as the party's 2016 presidential candidate, along with a focus on the U.S. economy. Yesterday, Trump appeared on stage to introduce his wife Melania, and in an uncharacteristically short speech described her as an amazing mother, an incredible woman. But his speech prompted questions about its origins after a journalist noted striking similarities in one passage to an address Michelle Obama gave at the Democratic National Convention in 2008, praising her husband, who went on to twice win national elections. VOA's Vincent Makori is attending the event. He speaks with Studio 7's Chiwoniso Jani about Melania's speech.
Soon after that speech, it was established that she had literally taken a whole line from a speech that was given way back by the current First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, where she literally said word for word what Michelle Obama said.
We see that there was the former New York Mayor Rudy, who says in his speech, there is no black America, there is no white America, just America, in his Keep America Safe. What can you tell us about that?
Indeed, he gave a speech that some say was way better than a speech he could have given for himself when he was trying to run for president way back in 2008. Just the same way it was then, America is in under threat of a terrorist, Islamic extremist, as it says, and it needs a leader who can guarantee that they can win against this terrorist. He did a great job in trying to make a case for Mr. Trump, but also a case against Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration.
Can you share your sentiments on the immigration policy and Zimbabwe?
Mrs. Trump's position on immigrants is extreme, is that it should be almost impossible for an illegal immigrant to stay in this country. It should be even harder for a person who is outside of this country to come into this country. And once that, an implementable policy that will make it harder for, say, a Zimbabwean who lives in this country illegally to continue staying in this country, there's no sympathy from the Trump position. There's no sympathy for a Zimbabwean immigrant who is here illegally, and as well as those who may be outside and be trying to get in.
And that was VOA's Vincent Makori speaking there with Studio 7's Chiwoniso Jani.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Today, our host on The Connection, Tungamili Nkomo and Tatenda Gumbo, will be talking with listeners about protests by Zimbabwean youths living in the diaspora.
And now a quick recap of today's top stories.
President Mugabe takes a swipe at Pastor Ivan Mawarire, saying he's being sponsored by the West to cause problems in Zimbabwe.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission implements sweeping electoral reforms in the country.
And Donald Trump's wife, Melania, is accused of allegedly plagiarizing United States First Lady Michelle Obama's 2008 speech.
That's it for tonight. Please do stand by for me for the news in Ndebele. Good night.
I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.